They told me it was science, that I was chosen for my mind, my precision. But when I stood behind the glass and watched a man die choking on the vapor I synthesized, I stopped being a scientist. I became a weapon. And the worst part, I didn't scream. I didn't run. I told myself he was transcending, because by then, I had already buried the woman I used to be. And the only thing left was faith. Faith twisted into something so toxic, it smelled like death. If you haven't already, make sure to follow us and tap the notification bell. We drop new content every day. Stay tuned so you never miss a story.
Terror in Tokyo Subway. Chapter 2. The Experiment of Faith. You don't notice the moment obedience becomes identity. It's not a switch, it's erosion. Silent, constant, comfortable. By the time I was invited into the inner lab, I no longer referred to myself as Haney. At least, not in my head. I was the vessel, as they called me. Chosen because I understood both science and suffering. It sounds ridiculous now, I know. But in that room, with its white walls and scripture-scribbled glass, it felt like a promotion. A spiritual advancement cloaked in sterilized authority. The lab was hidden beneath a former bathhouse outside Tokyo, retrofitted with airlock doors, cameras, and biometric locks that clicked like bones. The first time I stepped in, I noticed how quiet it was. Not a silence of peace, but of anticipation. As if even the walls were holding their breath. I was led by a woman named Noriko, older than me, pale-eyed and devout in a way that unnerved me. She never blinked when she spoke. She always smiled, even when describing death. "This is where the real healing begins," she whispered, brushing her gloved fingers along a chrome tray. "You're ready now, Haney. You've suffered enough." I nodded. I didn't question her anymore. I had been taught that questions were the crutches of the unenlightened. They gave me formulas, some of them familiar, others laced with unfamiliar radicals. They handed me glass vials, sealed in velvet-lined boxes. "Analyze. Enhance. Purify," they said. But it wasn't purification. It was preparation. One particular compound, compound Delta 7, was unmistakable. A derivative of sarin. Colorless. Odorless. Lethal in microliters. I knew this. I had written a dissertation on it 6 years ago. And yet, I labeled it cleansed agent, as instructed, and passed it forward. Some part of me, what little remained untouched, screamed. It clawed at my insides like an animal in a burning cage. But I silenced it. I told myself I was saving the world from its own sickness. That pain was the purifier. That death, in the right context, was rebirth. That's the thing about manipulation. When it's done right, it doesn't just silence your doubt, it weaponizes it against you. The deeper I went, the more the world outside faded. I stopped calling my mother. I stopped paying rent. When my university paycheck stopped depositing, I didn't notice. I was moved into a collective dormitory where we wore identical gray robes, ate from wooden bowls, and attended nightly sermons. And he was always there, Asahara. Not physically, not always. But his voice lived in every hallway. His image adorned the walls like a god with human flaws. I saw him once, up close, during a small blessing ceremony. He touched my forehead. He whispered one word. Faith. I wept. Not because I was moved, but because I finally felt seen. Then came the testing phase. Noriko explained it casually, like a midterm exam. "Volunteers only," she said. "Chosen souls. We must see how the spirit reacts under chemical awakening." A man was brought into the chamber. Thin. Eyes wide with admiration. A robe-clad disciple. He bowed as if greeting destiny itself. I stood behind the glass, fingers trembling over the console. The compound in my hands was barely altered sarin, suspended in aerosol. Meant to simulate controlled transcendence. "You are the bridge," Noriko reminded me. "Don't hesitate. His pain is the offering." The seal hissed. The vapor filled the air. At first he smiled. Then he coughed. Then he collapsed. His face turned a color I didn't know skin could turn. His mouth foamed. His eyes rolled back. He twitched once. Then stopped. Noriko clapped twice. "Beautiful," she said. "He's free." I vomited in the corridor. Not because he died, but because a part of me believed it was beautiful. Later that night, I sat alone under the flickering fluorescent lights of the dormitory stairwell, clutching my hands to stop them from shaking. I could still smell the vapor in my hair, even after scrubbing. And then, Daisuke sat beside me. "You did well," he said softly. "I heard. I killed him," I replied, barely above a whisper. "No," he said, placing a hand over mine. you delivered him. There was no judgment in his eyes, just awe, worship, reverence. And that terrified me more than the death itself. From that moment, I changed. Not all at once, but enough. I began moving differently, speaking differently. I accepted the new name they gave me, Hikari Light. It was meant to reflect the path I now illuminated. I buried Haney in a shallow grave at the base of my conscience. And every time I wanted to dig her up, I reminded myself, the world outside doesn't want you. But here you're chosen. Here, your suffering has meaning, even if that meaning drips from the mouth of a dying man.